Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the United Malt Group conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Mark Palmquist, CEO of United Malt. Please go ahead.
Great, thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on the conference call at a relatively short notice. I'm Mark Palmquist, CEO of United Malt, and I'm joined on the call by our CFO, Amy Spanik. You'll see an announcement we made to the ASX yesterday afternoon regarding an update on our trading conditions across various markets. That announcement also made reference to the impact of two significant items on our forthcoming FY21 results. Today, we'll provide you with an update on our trading and information on these items and provide an opportunity for questions. So first, an update on trading. As we continue to manage the impact of COVID-19 on our business, we are seeing different impacts across geographic markets. In North America and the UK, where vaccination rates are higher, and through the summer months, we're seeing volumes improving as venues reopen. This demonstrates the good operating leverage we have to markets returning to more normal conditions. We are expecting malt volumes for the full year to reach around 95% of pre-COVID levels. As we have seen an increase in craft beer demand, that has improved our sales mix for more specialty malts and an increase in margins in our warehouse and distribution division. That creates a good platform into FY22. In the UK, distilling demand remains steady. That's consistent with distilling customers increasingly laying down spirits for aged whiskey. Our Grantham facility has been closed with additional volume coming online from our Arbroath and Whittam facilities. Our new facility in Inverness provides us additional malt capacity to the distilling market with a significant proportion of the new capacity underpinned by expanded contracts with customers. This will be operational by July 2022, slightly behind schedule due to ongoing social distancing requirements. So we're fairly happy with how our North American and UK markets are performing currently, despite the fact that COVID-19 continues to exist in both areas. We are seeing a somewhat different picture in Asia and Australia. These markets have lower vaccination rates and have been impacted more recently by the COVID Delta strain. That has caused increased lockdown, strict stay-at-home provisions in these markets, which has impacted demand for malt. This has been further compounded by continuing ocean freight disruption and freight cost increases across the shipping market. On a net basis, we expect the underlying EBITDA for FY21 will be in a range of $129 to $134 million. Now, that includes the negative impact of $11 million related to the 11% appreciation in the Australian dollar versus the U.S. Dollar this year. It also includes the one-off items that we talked about in the first half with the closure of Grantham and the transformation cost of about $7 million. As you have seen from other companies reporting over the past few weeks, the recent change in the IFRIC accounting pronouncement results in a change to the accounting treatment of costs associated with software as a service, or SaaS. Specifically, costs which were previously capitalized now have to be expensed under the new accounting pronouncement. For us, this impacts the accounting treatment of the ERP and transfer management system that is still in development and has not commenced amortization. The result of this accounting change will decrease FY21 EBITDA by approximately $6 million. With the inclusion of this additional expense, we expect the FY21 underlying EBITDA to be in the range of $123 to $128 million. Now, as I said at the start of the call, our statutory results for the year will be impacted by two significant items. I will talk to each of these. The first one relates to one of our long-standing grain storage contractors, which entered administration on the 12th of May, 2021. In our half-year accounts, we advised that they had entered administration, but at that time, we didn't have access to the contractor's facility so that we could determine if any potential inventory deficiency existed. Since then, a stock assessment report from the administrator has concluded that stock in the possession of Alexander Inglis and Son is lower than expected and significantly less than the claims in the stock received by the administrator from third parties, which includes us, United Malt. We are actively pursuing all legal and commercial avenues on this issue, but at this time, We estimate a provision in the range of 2 to 3 million pounds, or the equivalent of 4 to 6 million Aussie dollars. We'll update you on the provision, and that will be reported in the year-end accounts. The second item relates to a bad debt provision from one of our Asian customers as a result of COVID-19. As I said earlier, the Delta variant across Asia is causing trading difficulties for customers from increased restrictions and lockdowns. These restrictions have negatively impacted consumption of beer in the region. In addition, typical customer replenishment cycles have slowed due to COVID-19 and have been exacerbated by the rising cost of container freight shipping to the region. We do not expect any material recovery in export sales to the region until freight disruptions fully dissipate and COVID-19 restrictions normalize through higher vaccination rates. One of our customers has been impacted by this recent confluence of events, and although we remain in ongoing discussions with them, we currently expect to incur a one-off significant item provision for potential bad debt from this customer of approximately $16 million. An updated provision will be reported in our year-end accounts. These significant items will impact our reported results such that statutory EBITDA is expected to be in the range of $103 to $108 million for FY21. Statutory NPAT is expected to be in the range of $15 to $18 million for FY21. I would stress these significant items impact our reported results. Our dividend policy is to pay approximately 60% of underlying NPAT as dividends, and the company does not expect a change in this policy. Our covenants are based on underlying results, and we expect our gearing ratio to be at the low end of the targeted range of 2 to 2.5 times at the end of FY21. The United Malt team has worked hard to manage our operations in response to the very challenges of COVID-19, and we've been able to respond and adapt flexibly to changing customer needs. While we are disappointed to have to announce the impact of these significant items, the fundamentals of our business remain strong. As we have demonstrated, where vaccination rates are higher, we are seeing a return to more normal conditions. The business has good leverage to improve performance. We remain well-placed to return to growth once conditions stabilize, supported by our strong market positions, strategically located malting assets, and our market-leading distribution platform that is well-positioned to service customers' ingredient needs. In North America, demand for malt is rebounding with the reopening of venues, greater activity in the warehouse distribution segment, which services the craft market. We're seeing consistent ordering and improvements in the sales mix with greater demand for specialty malts. The warehouse and distribution segment is also benefiting from our optimization programs driving lower costs. In the UK, we continue to focus on servicing the Scottish whiskey market, which requires malt to meet the long-term requirements of distillers to produce aged whiskey. The additional production capacity at Arbroath is operational and performing to our expectations. As I said earlier, the current situation in Australia and Asia are more impacted by COVID restrictions. Performance in Australia is being negatively affected by the extended lockdowns in New South Wales and Victoria, with subdued domestic demand in both our processing and our warehouse and distribution segments. Asia is being impacted by global freight delays, higher freight costs, as well as COVID-19 restrictions. And again, we do not expect a material recovery in export sales to the region until freight disruptions fully dissipate and COVID-19 restrictions normalize through higher vaccination rates in the region. I'd like to take the moment here and give you a quick update on barley conditions as we're getting into harvest here in the Northern Hemisphere. We may have seen the crop condition, or you may have seen the crop conditions in North America have deteriorated due to the drought, which has impacted barley crop size and quality and has also elevated global barley prices. We remain well placed to meet these challenges, and we source barley from multiple growing regions, and our production facilities are located close to transport infrastructure. And as we have done in prior difficult seasons, we're able to source barley from other geographic regions. And this year, we are proactively sourcing foreign barley to supplement our locally sourced barley requirements to meet our customers' needs. The majority of our contracts with customers reflect the ongoing changes in barley prices. And there are other areas in the UK. We've got good crops there and very good quality. As well as many of you would know, we're at very good progress going on in Australia as well. Just a comment on our transformation program. We continue to implement our transformation initiative, and we're committed to delivering $30 million of net benefits in EBITDA by FY24. The implementation of our new ERP and our transportation management system is underway. Total expense on the systems is expected to be $20 million over the 3 years, with $6 million of expense completed in FY21, approximately $10 million in FY22, and approximately $4 million in FY23. This will be expensed in future periods as part of the change in the accounting treatment. In conclusion, I'd just like to say that we're managing the COVID situation as well as we possibly can, and we remain well-placed to return to growth from conditions as they normalize. Thanks again for your attendance on the call, and I will now hand it over for questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. In the interest of ensuring everyone has an opportunity to ask a question, please limit your questions to 2 at a time. Your first question comes from Apoorv Sehgal from UBS. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Mark, Amy, and Renee. Mark, my first question for you. If we're looking today versus when you updated the market last in May, can you talk about the two key incremental headwinds we might have to consider for our FY22 earnings forecasts? I guess firstly, the unfortunate COVID situation in Australia and Asia, which looks likely to flow into the first half of 22. And then secondly, the higher freight costs. You know, if possible, can you try and quantify the cost impact there in FY21, but then more importantly, what sort of cost impact we can assume for the first half of 22? I guess I'm just really trying to understand what yesterday's update should mean for our FY22 earnings, please.
Sure, appreciate the question, Sipu. So the impact in FY21 certainly was softer volumes coming out of Australia as a result of what's happening in Asia. Also a slight impact in Canada because we also export into Asia out of that area. But we had good pickup in business in the U.S. And certainly domestic Canadian, and good pickup in the U.K. So one was kind of offsetting each other. So when we looked forward for FY22, it's really about the timing of the improvement that we'll see as a result of the Delta variant. Increases in vaccination rates would be very important so that we can get back to increase in demand across the Asian marketplaces. So that's a timing issue that we're just going to have to see where it goes. In the areas where we do see Delta variants, if I take North America and UK as an example, where they've had some increases, but the high vaccination rates has allowed them to keep the venues open. So we'd be hopeful that in beginning of FY22, in the first or second quarter, that we'll be able to experience that as well. So that's one issue we have. The second issue is certainly dealing with some crop condition issues in different regions. Again, the one that we're focused on is Canada. Reduction in supply and some variability in quality, it is not necessarily a negative issue. It's just responding to it and making sure that we've got bringing in quality and supplies and being able to manage that for our customers. And so we're in deep, deep conversation with them, working through that. So those would be, I would just call it, to kind of the two bigger issues that we have in front of us, but both of those are ones that we can deal with. We understand how to operate through the challenge. We've learned a lot, for instance, dealing with COVID, that we can operate better today than we could a year ago and working with it.
Thanks, Mark. Is there a way of, like, that freight cost inflation, is there a way of quantifying, like, what the dollar sort of incremental freight cost is in the second half of 21? Because I guess that would be a good guide for us to use into first half 22.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I forgot to cover the freight for you. So the vast majority of the freight cost actually is passed through to our customers. So in particular on containers, that is a cost that is borne by our buyer, our customer. And so we have seen not just the disruption in getting containers, but the other disruptions getting right on vessels, but we also have seen container rates, depending upon which channel it's going in, that has increased by 2 to 3 times. So it's been a big impact on the cost to our customers. The places that we have any increases in transportation is really more on the inbound supply chains into our plants or some of the domestic distribution freight costs that we incur in our warehouse distribution area. And we have seen costs that have been running. If I look at trucks or lorries, cost increases depending upon region have been 10-15%. We've been able to manage that. They ultimately can get reflected in our product costs. So it's just that time frame that goes, between the time us incurring the higher transportation and translating that into the price of the multiple. So it's not a big impact to us on a cost base. Where we feel the impact is what it does to our customers. Their costs go up. And so that can have an impact in terms of when they ship. It could actually delay a performance on a shipment, as example. So we see the impact in terms of what it means to us in production of malt and when shipments go out. So that's exactly what we're experiencing into our Asian customers right now. So shipments are getting delayed. It's a combination of demand going down, but it's also the cost structure and the disruption that's happening on the container freight.
Okay, sure, thanks. And just my second question then, for Amy, just on the SaaS expenses, please, there's sort of two parts to my question. Firstly, are those SaaS expenses confined to FY21 to 23 specifically and then like zero in FY24, or should we be thinking of it as an ongoing expense beyond FY23? And the second part to that question also is, do you plan on disclosing the SaaS expense separately from underlying EBITDA going forward?
So thank you for those questions. The answer to the first one, that is contained purely with the ERP and the transportation management system. And once that implementation is done, we do not expect that that would be an ongoing cost that we would incur going forward. We are not planning to break it out outside of underlying, with the exception for these first couple of years, we would probably have it as part of our bridge, similar to what we did from a lease accounting perspective when AASB 16 was first coming in.
Okay, thanks, guys.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Grant Saligari from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, or afternoon, I guess, for you, Mark, Amy. Can I just follow up on the inbound logistics cost question? Because I remember a number of years ago, and I was trying to dig through my notes and find a year, but you had abnormally wet weather in the U.S. harvest, which impacted barley crop quality. And as I recall, there was quite a negative impact on profitability because of the higher inbound freight costs. So could you just maybe just reconfirm or clarify that those higher sourcing costs, particularly the freight costs, can actually be reflected in the customer malt contracts, or how that pass-through actually works, please?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Grant. I do remember it well. We had, it was actually Canada was really more the issue. We just got heavy snowstorms on crops, so we had to move some malt barley around from Saskatchewan, Manitoba, pulling over to Calgary. And that same year, we're sitting in a situation of drought in Australia as well. So both of those occurrences we called out was around the $3 million type of cost, additional cost for us. Our risk that we have is not the price risk. It sits mainly with the quality, and it sits with the supply risk. The difference that we're seeing this year is that there's been a dramatic increase in the overall malt prices that is already reflecting a lot of the costs of having to move barley around and source it from other areas, because the drought has been pretty well known in Canada now for well over 90 days. So a lot of the price of the malt barley already reflects that room and coming crop. So I don't anticipate costs to be similar to what we experienced the last go around, but you know, again, there are some inefficiencies that we'll have to absorb on that inbound supply chain. So there'll be some costs, but I certainly wouldn't consider them to be you know, anything any higher than we experienced back in the snowstorms of Canada.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thanks. And maybe just second question, just on the balance sheet, I think it's really helpful calling out where your leverage ratios were going to sit and the confidence in the dividend payment. I'm just keen to understand, just in terms of cash flows for FY22, in terms of things like final payments for CapEx for Inverness, maybe you could just sort of clarify or expand on what some of the cash outflows might be over the next sort of 6-9 months, please. And maybe if you're, I'm not sure whether you've stated in the past, but just sort of how much headroom on the covenants you actually have at the moment.
I'll go ahead and take that one. Taking the CapEx question first. So we do have a couple of larger projects that are continuing, the biggest one being the expansion that we have going on in Scotland that will continue through until July, as Mark had mentioned in the earlier comments. The other larger project that is continuing into FY22 that should be completed by the end of the calendar year is the Perth kiln expansion that we are doing down in WA. With regard to where we are sitting from a gearing perspective in the headroom, we actually have not put out what the limits are with regards to the bank covenants, but we do have that ratio or the range between the 2 to 2.5 times, and we are expecting to be on the low end at the year end, and then we do have some buildup as we get into the half year, which is the normal seasonal cadence.
How much money is still to be spent in Inverness? Can you talk about that? Can you disclose that?
Those numbers are still being calculated. It's something that as we are finishing up this current year and going into the next fiscal year. So we don't have that out ready to go yet.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from David Probicki from Macquarie Group. Please go ahead.
Morning, Mark, Amy and Renee. Thanks for taking my questions. The first one is, are you seeing anything structural in the market or in your business, or is it more about the recovery from the COVID-impacted period not being linear?
Thanks for the question, David. No, we're not seeing anything structural. That is something that we were concerned about, very honestly, as we're going through COVID. Was there going to be any change? So, you know, things such as the craft business being able to walk through the hard shutdowns, any big change in behavior of alcohol beverage consumptions, any changes in terms of outright demand or facilities are being located. And we're not seeing it. The craft business has been very resilient, and most importantly is that the craft producers have been very resilient. So we've seen a nice jump back. We've seen the vast majority of them come back online. There's been a little bit of change in ownership, but that's been minor as well. So that's all been operating very, very well. And also there's comments, you know, about transportation and some of the costs have gone up and shortage of drivers and things like that. Again, those we think are aberrations. They certainly are pushing up some costs in the short term. But we're just not seeing any major changes going on there. In terms of customer habits, we're seeing a very nice, robust return to the craft business in particular, but also on-premise consumption we're seeing is growing well. The addition of off-package capabilities that was developed over the past 18 months is also benefiting that marketplace as well.
Thank you, Mark. And the second one is, it's just around the profile for FY22 and onwards. Do you think you can get back to earlier FY17 margins, for instance, in the medium term on a like-for-like basis, kind of pre-AASB 16 and considering the cost out that you've done, the optimization, closure of less productive sites, et cetera?
David, so what's the question in there? Just what do we think that looks like?
Yeah, if you can kind of get back to the EBITDA margins that you've experienced historically.
Yep, we think that we can get back there, and the reason I do say that is this aspect of we're still well-positioned in the market. We're still seeing good demand on that side. We think we're on a pathway for both a cost reduction, but as well as an improvement on the margins. And a lot of improvement in the margins can come with some of the effectiveness that we're seeing that we can operate in our supply chain. So we think that we can get back into that in the medium term. We don't see anything in the market that says that we shouldn't be able to do that.
Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Your next question comes from John Campbell from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys, and thanks for the update. Just on North America, with the reopenings that we've seen, which is obviously variable across the different regions, different states, et cetera, we have seen some rise in case numbers post the broad reopening. But can you just give us any comment on, are there any of the larger states, California, et cetera, that you're seeing anything like a relapse, any movement back to more social distancing? I've heard that there's a bit of mask wearing, but anything that could, impact, I guess, the speed of the recovery in North America? So that's my first question.
John, we haven't seen it, and you're right. The cases being driven by the Delta variant is definitely putting some higher spikes in where we were just even back in June. But so far, we haven't seen restrictions coming in place anywhere yet on venues. You're right. There's states that are putting back where wearing a mask indoors is one of the things that's been added back in. But we'll have to wait and see because we're still running summer months. And so we'll just have to see if that will happen. My opinion is I think we're just, in the U.S. anyway, we're trying to learn how to deal with living with COVID. And so vaccination rates need to get higher, obviously, but it's certainly making an impact in terms of risk of hospitalization, risk of fatality. And it certainly seems like the U.K. is running the same course here. It's just finding a way to learn how to live with it.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. And in terms of, large-scale sporting events and concerts and the like, are there any restrictions that are still being imposed there?
We haven't seen any restrictions being imposed. We have seen individual events that may have been canceled, but that's typically the result of, let's say it's a concert, it's typically the result of that there's been a number of positive cases in the band that's going to play, as an example, and so then they will cancel. But we haven't seen anything in venues being canceled because of restrictions.
Okay. That sounds pretty positive, assuming it continues on that trajectory for FY22. My next question, or second question, is, The mix shift back to craft that you've highlighted, is it possible for you to indicate, are we in, say, North America, are we back to pre-COVID splits between craft and mass volume beer, or are we're not there yet?
So, John, we're not there yet, but it's been trending in that direction. So we're getting a lot closer to it. So a little bit more to go here as we walk into FY22, we'll see where that goes. The mix itself in specialty malt is changing somewhat, and that's always a continual change that goes on in the craft. So, we would have had different type of specialty malts that would have been very favorable to IPAs. We're seeing a lot more of lagers or pilsners now being produced at the craft level. And so that requires, pilsner malt and Munichs, Viennas, things like that. So the mix is changing. But if I just look at it strictly as specialty malt versus base malt, we're not quite back to traditional, but it's been trending that direction now for a period of about 4 months. We expect it to continue.
Thanks, Mark. Look, there's a little bit of work going on in my house, so excuse me if there's any noise in the background. I'll try and mute it after the question. My last single question for Amy is, with the expensing now of the SaaS costs, which you've indicated that you're going to call out for us going forward, in terms of any impact on D&A as well, I mean, you're going to be able to give us, so we can ensure that we're treating it correctly, we're not missing reduced D&A charges and the like. So that's my question.
So because these costs are actually part of an implementation that hasn't actually gone into production yet, there is not an impact that is contained within depreciation or amortization that would have been missed previously.
Okay, so that's going to remain much as is, plus obviously when the Inverness plant goes on stream, then the D&A charge goes up from there on.
That would be correct, yes.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Great. Thanks, John.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Mark Topi from Select Equities. Please go ahead.
Oh, hello. My first question is if you can provide a little more detail around the bad debt, if you like, with the Asian customer. It doesn't sound like it's a solvency issue, and you allude to being able perhaps to claw back on that customer. And also just in terms of credit management, do you have to tighten your credit management approach in Asia as well?
Thanks, Mark. It is an issue in relation to payments that we're not receiving, and so we have stopped shipment, and that's the reason that we're looking at this. Most importantly is that our concerns are the external issues going on with the Delta variant, the freight situation. Demand is down considerably, shipments being delayed by a lot of customers that we see in that area, that we are just sitting in a situation that we don't believe that we're going to receive most of the accounts receivables that we have. Now, in saying that, we're in conversation, and we've been in constant conversation with this customer and trying to see if there's a pathway to come through this. But very, very honestly, I think the recovery, if any, would be pretty low, and so we would anticipate that when we get to the end of the fiscal year that we will have provision for this debt.
Right, because you say it's a long-term, has been a long-standing customer, so would you still be doing business with this customer, or just to understand that situation a little bit better?
Yeah, today I don't see how we would do business with this customer. I don't think he'll have the capabilities to continue to operate in the marketplace. So it's a business that when it starts to improve, that we would be replacing in another direction. But to your question you had is around, do we see something in how we evaluate credit risk? Is there something going on in Asia that we should be looking at? We certainly have taken a look through all of our customers, not just in the Asian region, but throughout United Malt, and making sure that we're adhering to our policy. But it's not just the credit amount. It's also taking a look at the customer and saying that under these type of changes in conditions and circumstances, how strong is that customer being able to walk through those type of conditions, and that's what we're going through. That's something we're a lot more sensitive to. I say this is a customer that we've had consistently for 20 years, and has been a good performer in the past.
Okay, I've got that. And then just secondly, in terms of the productivity gains that have been scheduled, is there any scope to perhaps accelerate or drive those savings in financial year 22? And can you give us an idea perhaps in terms of the scheduling of the productivity gains over the next couple of years then?
Yeah, we think we're on track at a schedule that makes sense to us. So when we talk about the transformation being $30 million, we said it would be roughly split between 22, 23, and 24. Those improvements we still think will be that way, just because some of the things we need to do in 22 to get done will help provide the improvements in 23 as an example. So not sure that we can accelerate that much. But I just also highlight again is that from a profit statement, because we're expensing the accounting or the ERP system, the TMS system, that that's a timing issue now. So we're paying for those in essence up front because we're expensing them. But they still will net by the time we get to fiscal year 24 at $30 million net benefit.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Richard Barwick from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Mark and Amy. Just to follow on from that last question, the $30 million, just to be clear, that's a full $30 million you're expecting in FY24 rather than a run rate, you know, at the end of 24?
Yes, it's a $30 million benefit that we think is an annualized benefit. So it's just the improvements in both costs and revenue that we will run. So it's not a cumulative over the 3 years. It's $30 million on an annualized basis.
Yep, understood. Thank you. And then, look, the only other question I had, and I'm not sure if you can answer it, but just thinking about the exposure for your business, is it possible to split up and saying what your, in terms of the way the product's selling through and your customer base and so on, what's your exposure to an on-premise versus an off-premise? And maybe it's easier to answer that, you know, on a pre-COVID basis, but just it would be helpful to sort of think through, trying to balance up the pressure on the business as it still is today.
Yeah, the best way I can come at it for you, Richard, would be one is to look at COVID, pre-COVID, although it's not that different today. So if I look at it by region, I look at North America. When we look at the split between craft and big brewers, because again, our craft guys, they're anywhere from 60 to 70% of their volumes is on-premise. Now that's changed a little bit during COVID because they're able to do more packaging as an industry. But if I just kind of take pre-COVID, they're in that 60 to 70% range on craft that is an on-premise type of consumption. So if we look at the breakdown between what our craft volume is and our big beer volume, and then you figure about, you know, 60-70% of it is on-premise, that gives you an idea, you know, what that on-premise consumption is. Now, the other part that's in there is our big brewers also drive on-premise consumption, but for them, packaging is a bigger deal than on-premise consumption. So it's a mixed bag as it goes through that. So if I try to go back and try to answer your question saying how important is on-premise to us, it's very important to us because it drives the higher margin business that we have in the craft business. And if more than half of it is on-premise consumption, it makes a big difference. I'm not sure I got you where you needed to go, but that's where I'm at.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Apoorv Sehgal from UBS. Please go ahead. Pardon me, Apoorv, you might be on mute. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Palmquist for closing remarks.
Great, thank you. And again, I really appreciate everybody joining the call. We're still excited about this business, and it's been interesting for us to figure out the best ways to work through some of the challenges we've had with COVID. And coming out of that, we've learned a lot. We've learned ways for us to operate, not just differently, but in some cases operate better. And so there are some nice benefits that are coming out for us as a company as we work our way through COVID-19. But the message I just want to leave you with is that our underlying business is very strong. Places where we see the opening, we are getting an opportunity to be able to really start to drive our business at back to pre-COVID type of levels. So we think that the future looks good, and we just got to work our way through and figure out how to all live with COVID in some form or fashion. So, again, appreciate it very much and having the opportunity to speak to you today, and look forward to speaking to you in the future. Thank you.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.